山根です。山根博士です。
生命の補助はできませんから通すことはできません。
では疾患に伝えてください。ゴジラに光を当ててはいけません。ますます怒るばかりです。
今そう言われても困ります。
先生、あちらの高台へ行きましょう。
押さないでください。押さないでください。
Only two atomic bombs, those at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, have been used in war. But of films dealing directly or indirectly with the bomb, there seems to be no end. What do these hundreds of films featuring such disparate characters as Godzilla and Dr. Strangelove reveal? Here to discuss the history and meaning of the bomb in the movies is Jerome Shapiro, a professor of cinema and comparative culture at Hiroshima University, and the author of Atomic Bomb Cinema, The Apocalyptic Imagination in Film. Professor Shapiro, welcome.
Thank you.
One of the first post-war bomb films was The Beginning or the End, which came out in 1947. Could you tell us about it, please?
Well, that's a fascinating film. It's been written about a lot. It really is a fictionalized attempt to describe the invention and use of the first nuclear weapons. In my book, it plays a very important role because it describes some of the optimism that was that people had just following World War II, seeing the world as having gone through this tremendously catastrophic event, a crisis, so to speak, and seeing a very hopeful future. And that, to me, is what's very interesting about it. A lot of people talk about its history and how it's fabricated events and sort of massaged the actual events that took place and the characters into a more happy Hollywood-type ending. But I see it as interesting in its how it placed itself between the end of World War II and a possibly hopeful future.
A number of commentators note that the bomb is radically new. The technology certainly is. Hiroshima and Nagasaki thus mark, for many people, a break with the past. While the technology is certainly new, you seem to emphasize in your book that our ways of thinking about the bomb are actually rooted in very ancient traditions. Our reactions to this new technology aren't entirely new themselves.
Exactly. When I look at these movies, as the subtitle to my book has indicated, and as I've talked a little bit about so far, what I see that holds all these films about the bomb together is the ancient Jewish apocalyptic narrative tradition. And a lot of people, however, look at the bomb and see it as a turning point in human development. But when we look at the apocalyptic tradition and other Jewish and non-Jewish traditions, what we see is the idea of cycles and histories of radical breaks, or what the word people now use is ruptures in history. That, too, is a traditional pattern. If you look at certain biblical texts and non-biblical texts, secular texts, we frequently see events described as a radical break in the development of history, a rupture in events. And certainly the bomb is a tremendous event. I think we can all agree that for the first time there really is the possibility of global annihilation. And yet other people have experienced events as similar. I mean, certainly to the Aztecs, Cortez's cannons were just as apocalyptic as the bomb is to us. So seeing the bomb in this way is really quite common response to catastrophic events.
Catastrophic almost always, or quite often, I should say, leads to a sense of despair. Certainly the Aztecs would have been despairing when the cannons came. And yet an interesting point that you make in the book is that the apocalyptic genre is not inherently despairing. It's inherently optimistic. How is that?
Well, absolutely. And if you look at other types of texts that have been evolving since the end of the war, such as the medical humanities, and, of course, biblical literature throughout, the primary goal, the first responsibility of any community or any leader that is experiencing a catastrophic event is finding hope. Without hope, there is no possibility of change. When you look at the scholarship on ancient apocalyptic literature rather than, say, the nuclear crisis we experience today, what we find is that the scholars all agree that this is a hopeful literature. Yes, it describes painful events that will come. It describes suffering and oppression that is taking place and will take place, but it's saying if we can get through this, there is the possibility of rebuilding community, finding greater meaning in life, and finding happiness. So the first responsibility of any literature is to encourage people to survive and self-actualize in themselves, and only then is the possibility of restoring community possible.
Dr. Strangelove is probably the most famous bomb movie, and I wonder how that fits into the apocalyptic tradition that you've described here. It ends, after all, with a bomb being dropped on the Soviet Union and other explosions filling the screen. Is that a hopeful movie in the end, too?
Well, my work, when I talk about the apocalypse, I look at several different scholars, and primarily John Jay Collins in his book, The Apocalyptic Imagination, and he talks about how genres evolve over time. And one of the phases or stages of how genres develop is subversive. The genres become subversive. And we can think about Peckinpah's Westerns sort of subverting the earlier Westerns, or even Mel Brooks's Blazing Saddles subverting earlier films. And Dr. Strangelove is a subversive, ironic, apocalyptic text. If we compare it to, say, The Time Machine, George Powell's 1960 film, The Time Machine, we see that it is hopeful, it just inverts it, that the people we would normally identify with as the bad guys survive and will survive to rule the world, unlike The Time Machine, where the bad guys are destroyed and the good guys survive. So it's subversive, but it's still following the apocalyptic patterns. It just presents people with a shocking vision of the world in which not the good, but not the righteous, but the unrighteous inherit the world. So it still is fitting within this pattern of apocalyptic tradition. It just uses that tradition in a very conscious, subversive, and ironic way to get people to think about both the nuclear crisis and the films they're seeing.
Strangelove is a good movie, maybe a great one. My impression, especially after reading your book and also watching late-night TV, is that a lot of bomb films are really awful. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I avoid that question. I mean, there's films I like and there's films I dislike, and there's certainly films that I watched that were just tedious and just awful to sit through, and wished I didn't have to. But that's the job of a scholar. Personally and professionally, to me, a good film is one that I can watch again and again and again, and each time I see something new. That to me is my only definition of a good film. Also, there's a lot of misunderstandings about what a good film is, especially when we see films from other cultures. Godzilla, for example, has always been considered a bad film, but I'm arguing that if we look at it within the context of Japanese aesthetic traditions, it's in fact quite a very good film. And the same thing with some of Kurosawa's films. Kurosawa was largely attacked, saying his last films in his old age were his worst films. But I would say that if we understand aging in the Japanese context and aesthetics within the context of elder artists and artisans, then in fact we have to reevaluate them. They become good films if we understand those aesthetic traditions. So, yeah, there really are some lousy, poorly made films, but they can be quite interesting from a scholarly point of view. And if we understand the cultural context from which these films evolve, then they become more interesting.
Well, you've mentioned the Japanese cinema tradition. One of the things I noted in your book was how movies that are made in Japan originally get transformed when they become American bomb cinema movies. The traditions apparently aren't quite compatible.
Exactly. I would say that the apocalyptic imagination is probably a global phenomena, that you can find examples of it in every culture. However, in the West, and particularly in the United States, the apocalyptic imagination has a particularly strong grip. there are apocalyptic traditions in Japan, indigenous traditions, and also ones imported from China that have become part of Japanese culture, but they don't play a very strong part in the culture. You don't see it very often. And there aren't many films that I would say are structured by a Japanese apocalyptic imagination. But there is one film, the Japanese title is Sekai Daisenso, which was translated into The Last War. And when you compare it, the Americans took the film and completely inverted it. They took the ending and put it at the beginning and made it the whole film a flashback. If you look at the Japanese film, the way it was originally released, it ends with the nuclear annihilation of Japan and perhaps the entire world. The Americans turn it into a flashback. And if there's a flashback, then there's a story being told. There's a storyteller. There's story listeners. There's people who have survived this event, or at least the cinematic event. So the Americans took the Japanese film and cut it up and changed its structure so it's closer to the Western apocalyptic tradition.
Just curious about what that reveals. Is it connected to the fact that the Japanese got bombed and the Americans did the bombing?
No, I think it's more connected to the fact that the apocalyptic imagination has such a strong grip on us even today, perhaps even especially today, considering our current world events, that producers at least thought that American audience could not handle a film that concludes with global nuclear annihilation. It's very hard for us to think about a complete end. In the Japanese tradition, the world comes to a complete end and a new one starts over. In our tradition, the world is purged and the worst elements are burned away, but what was good and pure in the old world survives, is reborn, and flourishes in the new world. And Japanese films don't allow for that. Their Japanese apocalyptic traditions don't really allow for that. So what I think happened is that the producers either simply couldn't handle the film, it just didn't make sense to them, or they thought that American audiences couldn't handle such a film because it would be received in America as being too negative.
The cockroaches in Godzilla survive until another day. You write in your book that regarding the morals or the ethics of nuclear technologies, you are, and this is an interesting word, stridently apolitical. I wonder about that. Is that a stance, this apolitical stance regarding the bomb that you've reached naturally, or is it one that you've willed yourself into for scholarly purposes?
Both. I find other scholarly works, though, such as Paul Boyer's very important book, By the Bomb's Early Light, and other scholars' works, extremely important. And yet, I am naturally, to use your word, irritated by the beginning a book with the assumption that the bomb is bad. To me, that's irritating. It assumes too much. It's pedantic. I think it's lacking in humility, and it's lacking in what scholars should do, of putting off conclusions until the end, which is not to say I find Paul Boyer anything but a humble man. I mean, he's a tremendous scholar, and so are these other scholars, but too often they put an anti-nuclear political agenda at the beginning of their work, and it influences their conclusions, which I think are largely wrong. So I'm naturally opposed to that. I found it very difficult to read these works without saying, oh, this is wrong, you can't do that. At the same time, in taking the time I took to write my book and having people read it and respond to it, I did come to see that I was taking a political position. At academic conferences, in articles I've written, the responses I've gotten to the papers I've read at conferences or written, people have heckled me. People have challenged me in saying I'm not anti-nuclear enough. So I've been forced into a position where I've had to defend myself for not taking a position against the bomb. I've, as you put it, had to will myself into this position from time to time and say, look, I am only going to talk about these films. Before I judge them as being good or bad, let's talk about what they mean. Let's talk about their historical and cultural context and the meanings we derive from them before we can judge them. And other people are too quick to judge them. They've already concluded that these films are bad.
Some of the films are bombs.
And for me, is the bomb good or bad? Well, there's now a growing body of evidence that the bomb was not used for military reasons. Is it good or bad? Oh, that's such a complex and difficult question. Robert J. Lifton has argued vociferously that we need to apologize to the Japanese for using the bomb, and I think that's a simple response. Paul Boyer, again, even though I disagree with him on some of his scholarship, I think has more rightly argued that rather than an apology, we need to express sorrow over these events. If we express, apology and that leads into guilt, this is an incredibly complex historical event. And I think that we need to come to terms with it. But certain, simple apologies are not going to do it, I think.
Well, thank you. I've been visiting with Jerome Shapiro, the author of Atomic Bomb Cinema, The Apocalyptic Imagination on Film.